It's time for Herd Mentality, the weekly episode where you control the discussion today on Locked On Bills.
You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Wednesday to you, and thank you for making Locked On Bills your first listen every day. And as a reminder to you, we are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. This episode of Locked On Bills is brought to you by Nissan. The only thing more exciting than the big game is the all-new, all-electric 2023 Nissan Ariya. There's only a few days left until the Super Bowl. Are you ready? The Nissan Ariya, the EV for people who love to drive. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Well, folks, the meat and potatoes of our discussion today is going to be herd mentality. But we did receive an update on the status of Buffalo Bills owner Kim Pegula. And I want to commit a little time here at the beginning of this episode to dive into that a little bit. We knew she had a critical medical situation back in June of 2022, but we didn't know what it was. And Jesse Pegula, one of the Pegula children, a famous tennis player, wrote about Kim in the Players' Tribune, where she shared the details. And I encourage you to read it. Go and read that. It'll be well worth your time. But I want to share some of those details from Jesse's article here at the top of the show. She said that Kim suffered cardiac arrest last June. And Kelly Pegula, another one of the Pegula children, provided life-saving CPR. She said, "My mom was asleep when my dad woke up to her going into cardiac arrest, and she was unresponsive for quite a while." And then at some point there, we know Kelly performed life-saving CPR. So real quick before we go into any more details there, and this is something that we talked about in this podcast coming out of the DeMar Hamlin situation and learning that CPR and the AED machine saved his life on the field. And so I hope that you found some urgency to get CPR certified. And as I shared on that podcast a few weeks ago, I've organized a class, and it's actually next Saturday here in my community. And actually several listeners of the podcast are doing it with me. And we're all going to get CPR certified and know what to do. So that way, if we're in a situation where somebody needs life-saving CPR, we can do it. And so I really, once again, want to encourage you to find out how in your community you can learn CPR, and I hope that you will encourage your friends and family members to do the same. So as far as her status right now, Jesse shared that she is dealing, and I say she, Kim is dealing with significant expressive aphasia and significant memory loss. She can read, write, and understand pretty well, but she has trouble finding the words to respond. It is hard to deal with, and it takes a lot of patience to communicate with her, but I thank God every day that we can still communicate with her at all. The doctors continue to be blown away by her recovery, considering where she started, and her determination is the driving force of that. Jesse went on and talked about the impact that Kim had on the Bills and Sabres and the employees that the Pegula family has, and said she was a shift in culture, positivity, and the heartbeat of many of the employees. She gave everyone so much of her time and effort. She lived it and loved it, and it was felt by everyone she met. Now we come to the realization that all of that is most likely gone, that she won't be able to be that person anymore. She's recovering. She's improving each day. But the extent of her recovery is still unknown. So we have some information here, obviously, some concerning details, some encouraging details, but at least we're now informed on what's going on and we'll certainly keep the Pegula family and Kim in our thoughts and prayers. And, you know, I just one more time, please find out in your community how you can become CPR certified and encourage people to do it. I've got a class next Saturday that I'll be taking along with a couple family members of mine, some friends, some listeners of the podcast, and I'm going to organize several more for people that I know to become CPR certified. So I hope this will be the urgency. This will give you the urgency that you need to seek that out for yourself. All right, let's dive into herd mentality. First one here comes from Alex. Alex says, it seemed like part of the Bills' offseason plan was hoping certain players would elevate their game in 2022. Gabe Davis, Ed Oliver, Spencer Brown, Isaiah McKenzie, Dane Jackson would be my list of players the Bills were hoping would take a jump. Do you think any of these guys or others on the team, maybe outside of Tremaine Edmonds, elevated their play this season compared to last year? And do you have a candidate for who could elevate their game to become a truly meaningful part of the team next season? Really like this question, Alex. And one of the things that I'm going to do, and I've done in past years, is dive into the opportunities for growth on the roster and who can deliver higher levels of contributions. You know, I think we get so excited about draft picks and players that the Bills can bring in from outside the organization when in reality, sometimes your clearest path to improving as a football team is the players that you already have getting better. And I think for any team, they're somewhat reliant on in-house players improving and stepping into roles and contributing at a higher level than what they did in previous years. And so, yes, that was certainly part of the plan. And when I look through the Bills roster, Tremaine Edmonds absolutely comes to mind as a player that elevated their play and delivered a higher level of contribution. I would say Gregory Rousseau as well. And also, I think it's worth acknowledging that a lot of good players remained good. But I do think it's fair to say, hey, Gabe Davis, more opportunity, not necessarily correlating with a bigger impact. Ed Oliver, about the same. Spencer Brown, about the same. Isaiah McKenzie, more production, but the same high variance player. Dane Jackson played a lot of snaps, but was, you know, up and down. I think if you take a quick glance, and we'll flesh this out a lot more in depth than I will right now, but guys that next year I think can take a step and really elevate their play and, you know, in turn improve the football team, Spencer Brown, Khalil Shakir, Gabriel Davis, James Cook, Greg Rousseau again, Kair Elam, Christian Benford, all those players come to mind off the top of my head. And I'm sure there's others that I'll sort out as we get to that part of our offseason conversation. But I think this is a good question here, Alex, and appreciate you acknowledging and understanding that importance of growth within the players that you already have. And again, there's players that didn't get better, but that's okay. You know, Jordan Poyer, Josh Allen, Steph Diggs, Mitch Morse, Deion Dawkins, those weren't players that were better this year, but you're satisfied with the caliber of player that they are and the contributions that they deliver year over year. The next one comes from Chris. I love this question from Chris. Says, is there anything obvious from a scouting perspective that McDermott and Bean missed when drafting Ed Oliver, considering the handful of guys that were selected after him that have had more impactful and better careers to this point? So, you know, you go back to that 2019 defensive tackle class, and there's a lot of good players that were drafted. The first one, Quinnen Williams, has been an absolute stud for the Jets. Then it was Ed Oliver. And then after Ed Oliver was Christian Wilkins, Jeffrey Simmons, Dexter Lawrence. I mean, guys that have really been big-time players for their teams. And Ed Oliver has been a good player, but not necessarily a high-impact player like we want him to be. And so the question is, was there anything obvious that was missed? And I think the answer to that is yes, and it's size. And I'm not sitting here saying that I didn't agree to draft Ed Oliver number 9. I would have done it at the time, no doubt about it. There's no question. I'm not trying to sit here and say that I too didn't fall into the same thing. And also acknowledging that Ed Oliver is a good starter. He's a good starter. He's just not a top-tier, elite, consistently dominant player. But size, it's absolutely size. That was the variable that was right there. Ed Oliver is 6'1 and 7'8". That's the 17th percentile for defensive tackles. 287 pounds, that's the 10th percentile. 77 3/8 on the wingspan, that's 15th percentile. 31 3/4 inch arms, that's 8th percentile. 9 1/4 inch hands, that's 10th percentile. Ed Oliver, small. He's a small, undersized defensive tackle. And I'm guilty of falling into this from time to time. I certainly am at other positions too. But Ed Oliver is an outlier in terms of size. He is. And that's why thresholds as disqualifiers are so important for you to stay committed to. You never want to count on a guy being the exception. Ed Oliver's a good player, but like we said, not a consistently dominant player. Scouting football players is really just risk assessment. You gather all the information, you compare it to historical norms, and then from there, what does it tell you about likely outcomes for that player in the NFL? If there isn't a long list of 6'1", 287-pound defensive tackles with sub-32-inch arms that are out there making an impact in the NFL, don't expect that player to do it. And so, yeah, I think there was something obvious here. It's that he's undersized. And the Bills probably broke some rules within their own scouting process to say, you know what? We like the skill set. The athleticism's off the charts. We think he can overcome it. But at the end of the day, he's small and lacks length. That's it. Appreciate that question, Chris. I love that one. The next one comes from Ribiculous. I hope I said that correctly. Ribiculous says, I was listening to the receiver breakdown pod, and you said Gabe had a limited route tree among other issues. I was wondering why that isn't an issue that he could fix. Can he learn and perfect more routes in the offseason to have a more versatile usage? Good question. Gabe Davis has a limited route tree because of his physical skill set. He's stiff, right? He's stiff in his lower half. He doesn't have loose hips. He doesn't have loose ankles. He's stiff. He lacks elusiveness. He doesn't have a lot of twitch that enables him to uncover quickly. He doesn't have the fluidity necessary or the explosiveness to get in and out of breaks suddenly enough to be a consistent separator. And that horizontal plane of routes, right? There's vertical routes. You think about a post, you know, a flag, just down the field, vertical, one cut, you know, and that's not a hard horizontal break. And then there's that horizontal plane, which is your more in cuts, you know, your horizontal breaks where you have to cross the face, get in and out of a break and turn and plant and pivot in a hard horizontal turn. That's never going to be his forte because he's stiff and lacks twitch and elusiveness. And so he needs to play a vertical style of game to compensate for his limitations. So it's, you know, we talk a lot about Gabe Davis and sometimes we appreciate that he had 800 yards and 7 touchdowns. And that's good wide receiver 2 production. And we say, you know what? He's got this far average depth of target. And so that takes away from his reception percentage and his target efficiency. And well, you know, he doesn't really play from the slot very often and doesn't get a lot of targets on short routes. And so, you know, that takes away from his ability to produce in that area. No. We're missing the point here. He's a limited player. He's got a limited skill set that limits the offense. He's not going to be able to run a wide range of routes with a high level of effectiveness because he's too stiff to be able to consistently get in and out of breaks and separate and uncover from NFL cornerbacks. That's what it comes down to. Now, when we talk about football players, it's most important to talk about what they can do, right? And what can they do and how can they help your team? Gabe Davis can get down the field. He can use his size and ball skills to win vertically. And that's fine. That's a great asset to the offense. But for a guy that's going to get over 90 targets, you want those targets going to a player with a more complete skill set that can uncover quickly, that can run all the routes, that can win after the catch. So, yeah, there's context behind all these metrics that we bring up all the time with Gabe Davis. But at the end of the day, it comes down to him having a limited skill set because he's tight in his lower half and doesn't have the physical skill to consistently run routes to all levels of the field, all types of routes, to really help the offense. And because of that, you have to adapt what you do to cater to a skill set. And to Ken Dorsey's credit, he did that. But when you do that, it takes away from your offense because that number two target, the guy that you're going to give a lot of targets to, doesn't do everything that you need him to do in that role. Or he doesn't do everything that you would like him to do in that role. That's what it comes down to. He's a limited player. And again, what can he do? Win down the field. You can get production. Gabe Davis is a useful player. But he can't be the guy that you give 90-plus targets to as your number two receiver and then wonder why your quick passing game and your intermediate passing game disappears at times, especially when you don't have that slot player figured out. Hopefully that kind of ties a ribbon into all of this Gabe Davis discussion that's been a heavy part of our offseason to this point. Today's episode is brought to you by Ultimate Football GM. You've heard me talk all about the mobile game app, and I can't tell you how much fun I've had competing against my fellow Locked On NFL host. In fact, Chris Carter of Locked On Steelers, he won the Locked On NFL Championship for the league that we have. Well, now it's your turn to compete, but more on that later. If you've ever dreamed of becoming an NFL GM and managing your own football franchise, well, your dream can come true, and this game is definitely for you. You'll manage every strategic aspect of your team, play through seasons, and lead your team to glory by trying to build a dynasty. With Ultimate Football GM, you're responsible for controlling the destiny of your franchise by hiring the right coaches and coordinators, trading players, navigating your franchise through free agency and the draft with all the ups and downs of a season, all of this in a challenging and realistic game world. Ultimate Football GM is completely free, playable, offline, play on the go as you want and when you want to. And we've actually created a Locked On League for you to compete against Locked On fans all over the world. Can you be the ultimate Locked On Football GM? Well, choose the Locked On League in the app to join and see if you can create a football dynasty. Locked On Bills listeners get a 100% free boost to their franchise when using the promo code Locked On in the game store. That's Locked On, so make sure to check it out today. To download the game, just visit ultimate-gm.com or look it up in the app stores. That's ultimate-gm.com. Ultimate Football GM, start your dynasty today. The next one today comes from Noda, who says, the 2022 seventh-round draft pick used to trade for Case Keenum offhand didn't seem expensive, but two quarterbacks were drafted later in the seventh round, Skylar Thompson and especially Brock Purdy, who seem to be very effective, and Miami and San Francisco now have these backups locked up into cheap contracts. Do you think this could be an affordable option for the Bills in the 2023 NFL draft? And he mentions drafting a fifth to seventh round quarterback. Listen, here's what I'll say about that. Skylar Thompson was awful last year. Awful. Did not play well. One of the least efficient quarterbacks in the entire NFL. My best friend's Kyle Krabs. He is hoping for the Dolphins, if they're committed to Tua Tagovailoa, to get a very good backup quarterback in place because he doesn't have any trust for Skylar Thompson. Skylar Thompson was objectively bad. So just because he played, that doesn't mean he was good. He limited that football team. Brock Purdy stepped into a very comfortable position with a coach in Kyle Shanahan who has a history of getting unsustainable production from random quarterbacks that don't have a whole lot of physical skill. Hello, C.J. Beathard and Nick Mullins. And now insert Brock Purdy into that conversation. I would encourage you to look at the history of seventh-round quarterbacks or sixth-round quarterbacks or even fifth-round quarterbacks, and you are going to see a very underwhelming list of football players. This was the big conversation that I had when everybody was excited about Jake Fromm, and I'm sitting there trying to tell people, like, this guy can't play. He can't play. And a lot of people said, oh, maybe he could be the next Drew Brees. Maybe he's a steal in the fifth round. And part of what I did there is I shared a graphic of all the fifth-round quarterbacks, and it's a very underwhelming list of guys. So I don't think the Dolphins have an answer in Skylar Thompson. We'll see on Brock Purdy, certainly a whole lot more encouragement there, but I watched Brock Purdy at Iowa State. I know the skill set. I'm not optimistic there. And maybe in Brock Purdy will be the 49ers quarterback moving forward, and I'll look like an idiot for saying that. But that guy's a limited football player that I'd be surprised if he has a meaningful career as an NFL starter. I think the reality is I'd encourage you to study fifth, sixth, seventh round quarterbacks. Go back and look at it. There's not a whole lot of meaningful contributors there. I'd much rather have Case Keenum than Skylar Thompson or Brock Purdy, to be completely honest with you. Andrew says, been thinking about wide receiver too. Me too. You think the Broncos would listen on Cortland Sutton? They gave money to Tim Patrick. Judy is 2 years away from needing a new deal, assuming they pick up the fifth-year option. They need to recoup draft picks, or do you think they try to keep him around and win now with the new coach and so much committed to Russell Wilson? What are your thoughts on how he could fit into the Bills' offense? Would probably have to create cap space. I understand the idea based on the context of the Broncos, but I don't love it. Sutton isn't the do-everything separation specialist that would excite me as the wide receiver too. I think Sutton is a modest separator. He's a big physical receiver, but not dynamic in and out of breaks. He's entering his age 28 season, and he doesn't really have the style of play that typically ages well in the NFL. And he's got a contract situation where he's due a pretty big amount of money over the next two seasons, and his $18 million salary in 2023 fully guarantees on March 20th. So now you have to get into a reworked contract with him. So Cortland Sutton would be a pass for me as a trade target for the Buffalo Bills. James says, who are some good guard and center draft prospects that would be a fit for the Bills as a starting right guard in 2023 and potentially the long-term replacement for Mitch Morse given his age and concussion history? I'll give you a list of guys here. I don't want to get too in-depth. At some point, we will get very in-depth with draft prospects, but just some names that I think are intriguing guard-center combos to be considering, you know, day two type players. Some of these maybe first round. John Michael Schmitz out of Minnesota, big darling of the Senior Bowl. Really good football player. I'd love him at pick 27, to be honest with you. Really comfortable with him. Joe Tippmann from Wisconsin. Big fan, maybe a first-round guy, definitely round two. Cody Mauch out of North Dakota State. Alex Forsyth out of Oregon. Emil Ekior out of Alabama. And then more of a guy that doesn't necessarily play center, but a guard that I like is Henry Banavalu out of Washington, probably a third or fourth-round guy. So we'll get more in-depth with that conversation, but there's options. And some of those guys I mentioned earlier, Michael Schmitz, Tippmann, Mauch, Ekior, Forsyth, those are guys that I think you can get. You know, some of them are first round guys, but others are day two that I think you can draft and get a really good starter. So that's where my mind goes when it comes to that conversation. Hope you've been getting in on the action over at Prize Picks. Prize Picks is my favorite daily fantasy resource. How does it work? Well, you pick 2 to 6 players, and if they score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, you can win up to 25 times your money on any entry. There's no competing against other people. It's just you versus the projections available. And Prize Picks offers projections on every sport that you can watch. And entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It is that easy. So download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up to play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code LOCKEDON. So if you deposit $100, Prize Picks will give you $100. If you deposit $50, Prize Picks will give you $50. Don't forget to enter promo code LOCKEDON at sign up for an instant deposit match worth up to $100. Well, folks, I've been telling you about Built Bars. They're the best tasting protein bars on the planet. And I love that they're a delicious treat that doesn't have all the fat and calories. Things are delicious. They're covered in 100% real chocolate, but they're healthy for you. These macros are off the charts. 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and a whopping 17 grams of protein. So many great flavors. You got to check them out. And look, you can go to built.com and order them. But you can now also go to your local Walmart or your local Sam's Club to get yourself a box of Built Bars, the best tasting protein bars on the planet. Check them out. You will thank me later. All right. The next one today comes from Chris. And Chris says, who would you rather have at guard and tackle? And he gives me two different options. So one is John Michael Schmitz, who's the Minnesota interior offensive lineman that we just talked about, and Spencer Brown at tackle. Or would I rather have Spencer Brown at guard and Broderick Jones at tackle? And Broderick Jones is an offensive tackle prospect from Georgia, and I think he's one of the better prospects in the class. I think he's a top half of the first round pick. And so what concerns me about scenario two is forecasting Spencer Brown to guard. Okay, I have no idea if he could play guard. I like John Michael Schmitz, but I don't think he's nearly the caliber of prospect as Broderick Jones. So I am going to pick option B here of Spencer Brown and Broderick Jones because I feel like I get the best two football players. I think Broderick Jones is going to be a real stud in the NFL. Big fan of his. Johnny says, what changes could the Buffalo Bills do to be more of a snow stadium team? It seems that this has been just as much or more of a disadvantage for the Bills as it is our opponents. What other areas do we need to work on to make this an advantage for the Bills? Against the Bengals, the script seemed perfect. We had home field advantage and snow pouring down, which you'd think we'd be hoping for, and it worked against our skill set in a big way. Appreciate the question, Johnny. As I thought about what I would say here in response to this, I thought about the snow games that I've watched the Bills play in under Sean McDermott, and the only snow game that I can think of the Bills losing under McDermott was the Bengals playoff game. And I honestly, when I consider the reasons why the Bills lost, I don't think of the snow as something that really had anything to do with the result of that football game. Now, perhaps it took a football team that was clearly gassed, right? We knew that they ran out of steam. They were a fatigued football team. And it created another variable to deal with that was just kind of too much in that moment. But I don't have enough meaningful data of Bills losing snow games that gives me anything to consider about the Bills' ability to win in the snow, because on my recollection, I don't really think the Bills have lost any snow games outside of that Bengals game. So if I'm missing something, let me know. But I just don't think there's this inventory of Bills losses in the snow that suggests there's a problem here. Last one today comes from Chris. Chris says, I know it's early and we have just started to dissect the Bills offseason in terms of roster makeup and cap constraints. From what I read, the Bills are already over the cap and will need to make some moves in order to get under the cap. That being said, I did a little research, and from what I can tell of the players we are paying a rather large premium for, I don't know who would qualify as a bad contract or one that Bean might want to move on from in order to free up cap. From what you can tell, do you see any bad contracts in the Bills roster that they need to move on from, or is it more of a question of money management and restructures in order to free up space? I know you'll probably get into this more during your offseason content, but I'm curious what your thoughts are on the Bills cap situations and contracts they have been given out. Thanks for all the great content. Thank you, Chris. Yeah, I would agree with you that the Bills don't really have any bad contracts and have done well to get out of some of those bad contracts over the years. I look at a John Feliciano was a bad contract, in my opinion. John Brown at that point in his career was a bad contract. Bills got out of those deals. AJ Klein got out of that deal, right? So I think the Bills have kind of trimmed the fat, if you will, when it comes to bad contracts. And there's no bad contracts. There's expensive players, but they're market value deals that are can measure it with the caliber of player and contributions that they deliver. So with that in mind, there's not a whole lot of cut candidates. Maybe Isaiah McKenzie, because you get a $2.5 million clearance in space. But it really is more restructures and extensions to create cap space. And we've seen the Bills do that, whether it was Mitch Morse with his contract and how that freed up space, or a lot of restructures. And that's what should happen, right? The cap is meant to be manipulated. And I think you should look at extension and restructures to get that accomplished. And so as we've worked through each player on the performance review series, I do highlight those contract opportunities. And so we're through the offense and we've highlighted a bunch of them so far. And, you know, in the coming weeks, I'll have Greg Thompson from Cover One on the podcast soon to get in the weeds with the contracts and really talk cap space to really tie a ribbon on all of that. But we're uncovering it as we go. There's a lot of opportunity, and it's not bad contracts. It's restructuring players that you've given a good contract to that allows for flexibility. And then, of course, a few extension candidates along the way. All right, folks, that's going to be it for today on the podcast. Hope you enjoyed. Tomorrow, we will continue the performance review series, starting to focus on the defense. So we'll close out the week with, edge rushers and defensive ends and then defensive tackles. So some good conversations are coming your way. Don't miss it. Make sure that you're subscribed. We'd love it if you took a second to rate, review, and share the podcast. Have a great rest of your day. Go Bills. And I look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.